I am in the third sphere and am trying my very hard for more faith and more love, and I know that I will get it, because I have before me every moment living examples in those who have received it to a wonderful degree and are still receiving it and progressing. As we in the long ago were old chums and thought a great deal of each other, I thought that you would be interested in knowing that I am happy and a redeemed child of the Father and on my way to spheres celestial. Well, I will not write more tonight, but sometimes I should like to come and have a real heart-to-heart chat about old times, for though those are things of the past and not to be compared with what I have now in the way of experience, yet as you are on earth I feel that we might both enjoy talking over old times, because we used to have some happy times together. So with all the old-time friendship and love and with a new love too, I will say good night, Frank Davis. I am here, Helen. I come and am glad to do so, as I have been waiting some time for some of your old earth friends to finish their writings. I rather enjoyed the last letter for it showed me that earth ties of friendship still survive for a while anyhow, in this world and that a meeting of long-parted friends brings happiness. I see Mr. Davis quite often and we talk of you and of the times of your earth life. I also try to help him and he is progressing and is in the right road to the high spheres. Well, sweetheart, I see that you are very tired and must stop so I will not write longer though I should like to very much. So give me a hug and a kiss and say good night. Your own true and loving, March 11, 1916 I am here, John. Let me write a few lines as I desire to tell you of something that may be of importance to you. You will remember that we have told you on many occasions that at some time you would be in condition to do the work for which you have been selected to do in a way when all physical cares and worries would be eliminated from existence, and I want to repeat tonight those promises and say that the time will soon come, the Paget message is 1916, when you will be in that condition and find yourself free to enjoy the opportunities that such freedom will afford you. We have been with you much of late, exercising our influence upon your spiritual thoughts and trying to help you to get in condition that will enable you to receive our messages without much difficulty and from the influences of these outside things, and we want you to get in condition that our work and yours can be done in this way. You must make the effort to assist us in placing you in this condition and if you will do so we will proceed in placing you in the position to bring about the end that we so much desired. I will not write more tonight but will try our best to help you in your efforts. Ease your mind and whatever money you can spare to attempt to find this success and we will help you. Of course you understand what we mean and very soon a spirit will come who will direct you in the matter and make your success certain. I will come a little later and write you more in detail. So trust and believe and you will not be disappointed. Good night. Your brother in Christ, John. I am here. John D. Mustry. I am interested in what John has written you and want merely to say that I have been selected to assist you in the matter to which he referred and will do my best to help you, and will be very careful in my advice, and I hope that you will have faith in me. This is all that I desire to say. Good night. Your brother in Christ, John D. Mustry. I am your own true and loving Helen. Well dear, you must not doubt what has been written you but try your best to follow the advice that may be given you and believe that you will succeed. John actually wrote you and so did the other spirit, whom I don't know, but who says he has been selected to do the work. He says his name is Mustry, that is all I know about him. You will have a further explanation of the matter a little later. Some of the higher spirits were present tonight as you read the messages and are very desirous to write other messages and will soon come to do so. You must pray more to the Father for his love and so get in the condition to receive the messages. I love you very much and so want you to be happy and free from all earthly cares. 344, we will come soon and write you, so kiss me and say good night, your own true and loving, Helen. March 12, 1916 I am here, Saint John, Apostle of Jesus. I was with you tonight and heard the sermon of the preacher on heaven and what it is and, as his text was founded on some expressions in a book of the Bible ascribed to me and which I did write, though not just as is contained in the Bible, I thought it meet, appropriate, that I should come and write you as to the truth of the sermon, And as to the value of the book as descriptive or suggestive of what heaven is and what its appearances are, and what the spirits of the redeemed are doing in what the preacher designated as service. Well, I first want to say that while I did write a book of the nature of the one in the Bible named Revelation, yet this one does not contain my writings to any great extent, nor are my ideas set forth or followed in this book of Revelation. As you may now know, in my time, and for a long time previous, the Jewish writers, because of the great troubles and persecutions their nation was undergoing, were accustomed to write books in the nature of the one contained in the Bible, and called Revelations, for the purpose of encouraging their people to believe that all the wrongs that they were suffering would be avenged by God, and their enemies made to suffer and become destroyed, and that in the end their nation would be rescued from its condition of servitude and sufferings and become the ruling nation of the earth. And these writings were accepted by the Jews as having the authority of divine inspiration and conveying to their nation the truths of God and the same promises of His intervening in their behalf. The writings were always ascribed to some prophet, seer, or man of God who had the special privilege of coming in contact with God or some of His angels through the mysterious and sacred means of visions. Of course, these writings were merely intended to encourage the Jews to establish their faith in God and in the belief that He would send them a Messiah who would have the power to redeem them from the punishments and thraldom that they were undergoing under the tyranny and strength of their heathen captors and persecutors. Always were these writings prophetic and held forth the promises for the future, without ever attempting to fix a time for their fulfillment, or there, the Paget Messages 1916. Ending of the nation's woes and the coming of its deliverer, so that time went on and the promises were not fulfilled, hope continued to exist and the belief of the Jews was not lessened, and non-fulfillment was explained by the further belief that the time for the consummation of their eagerly wished-for expectations had not yet arrived. That God was all-knowing as well as all-powerful and careful for their race and that He and He alone understood just when the proper and fitting time should arrive. This hope upon hope was a wonderful force in keeping up the beliefs and expectations of the Jews, and so effective was it that to this day they remain a nation or rather a race in belief and expectation of this coming Messiah. But, alas, as they did not recognize and accept Him when He did appear, they will never again see His appearance, for He will never come as their Messiah as expected of old, but only as the great teacher and redeemer, not only of their race, but of all the peoples of the earth. He has already come as such a redeemer, and is working now to lead men to the true and only way to life and happiness and immortality. But never will any Messiah come to the Jews to establish them on earth as a great and chosen nation, as nearly all of them believe and still look for. Thus, as I say, many books or manuscripts were written by the claimed Jewish prophets holding forth to the Jews the results of visions claimed to have been experienced by these writers. But as the prophecies, in the sense that the Jews understood them, have never been fulfilled, neither will they be fulfilled in the future, and their value is no reality. This custom, as I may call it, continued from these early times down to the time in which I lived and wrote, and my book A Prophecy was written by me, not with the purpose of establishing the Jews as a nation on earth, or causing them to believe that their hopes or longings would be fulfilled, but for the purpose of encouraging the Christians to believe that notwithstanding their persecution and sufferings and martyrdom, they would in the future life, when they should meet the Master and the saints, find joy and peace in heaven. But in my writings nothing was said about the wrath of God being visited upon the persecutors of the Christians or of their having to go into a hell of fire and brimstone, so that from that fact the happiness of the redeemed would be increased. My writings have been added to and all kinds of grotesque imagery interpolated so that the whole design and purpose of my writings were changed and destroyed, and the present book of Revelation is only a mere allegory of some one or more writers who were gifted with some knowledge of the Christian teachings and unusually oriented imaginations. This book is of no value, but on the contrary is doing much harm to the cause of the truth, as taught by the Master. As we who are in the celestial heavens and have knowledge of things heavenly as well as things earthly know to be the fact, it should not be accepted as a truth of the revelation of truths, and not be believed in for any purpose. It has led many good men and honest and earnest seekers after the truth astray, and cause them to believe and teach false doctrines that have resulted in much darkness and stagnation in the development of human souls in their longings for the truth. So, I say, let men entirely discard its teachings, and any and all lessons that the preachers or others, who think that they can understand its meaning, attempt to teach. The writings that I gave to my people, of the kind mentioned, have long ago served their purpose, and the writings called the revelations contain in it no truth that will help mankind to the heavenly kingdom or to their eternal happiness and atonement with the Father. Let it die the death of a falsehood, born out of time. I also was interested in the struggle of the preacher to explain what heaven is, and what his people who may consider themselves redeemed children of God, will find when they become inhabitants of that heaven. Well, he spoke truly when he said heaven is a place as well as a condition, for it is inconceivable that any condition of the spirit of a mortal could exist unless there be a place where that spirit could find a habitation. All space in the universe of God is a place, or contains places where things of existence must find localities. There is no such thing as a vacuum in God's economy, and all parts of space are fitted with something having substance, either material or spiritual, and wherever such substance is, there is a place for its abiding. Yes, heaven is a place, or a number of places, for the preacher is far from having the true conception of heaven when he supposes it is one large place, where all believers go after death, irrespective of their condition of soul and moral perfections. As I say, there are many heavens and the many places, all as real and substantial as are the 345, the Paget Messages 1916, different stories and rooms in your home of earth. And the partitions, if I may so speak, between these different places are just as impassable for spirits that have not the proper qualifications to pass through as are the partition walls between the various rooms in your earth homes for you mortals to pass through. These places are distinctive, and the many mansions that the preacher referred to, are situated in many heavens or more correctly many spheres of the heavens. Strictly speaking, there are two heavens in God's spirit universe, namely, the heavens of the redeemed and transformed soul by the divine love called the celestial heavens, and the heavens of the restored perfect man, called the spiritual heavens, each and all them being places of real perfection and substance. As one star differs from another star in glory, so these several heavens within heavens differ from one another in glory and appearance and in those things which help to make the mansions of their inhabitants beautiful and attractive and glorious. It would take too long for me to attempt to describe any of these heavens, for they each and all excel any conception that the mortal is capable of having, but I will say this, that there are no streets of gold or pearly gates, or suns or stars in any of them, only the light of God's love and mercy illuminates them. I will postpone my further writing, but will come very soon and complete what I intended to say about the sermon of the preacher, an attempt to show the real appearance of some of the heavens, and what service the redeemed children of God render when they come to the spirit world. So my dear brother, I will say good night. Your brother in Christ, John. March 14, 1916. I am here, John D. Parker. Let me say a word, for I am interested in you and your work to a very large extent. I have not written you before and I want merely to say that you are receiving these messages from the higher spirits, and you must believe that you are. I am a spirit who once lived in a country far away from where you live and was not a Christian man in an orthodox sense, but was a believer in God, though not in the God of the Bible, as I never thought that a loving God could be the wrathful and vindictive God that the Jews believed him to be. I have been in the spirit world for many years and am a follower of Jesus in his truths and teachings and am an inhabitant of the seventh sphere where only the followers of him live. I will not write more tonight as I see that you are tired, and others want to write a little. So with all my brotherly love, I will subscribe myself your brother in Christ, John D. Parker, of Liverpool, England. I am here, Josephus. I am Josephus. Yes, Josephus, the Jewish historian who has written you before. I merely want to say that I am interested in your work and that you are receiving messages from the high spirits whose homes are in the celestial spheres, and you must believe what they write you, for they write only the truth. I see that you are sleepy tonight and that I must not write more, though I would like to write you a long letter at this time, but I will come again and give you my views on certain matters in which you are interested. Your brother in Christ, Josephus. March 15, 1916. I am here, Professor Salyards. Well, I was telling you of the object of man's life on earth, and the necessity for his doing certain things, in a general way, in order to bring to mankind the happiness which might be theirs while on earth. Now I desire to go into a little in detail with reference to these matters. As has been written you before, there is only one way in which man can attain to the supreme happiness, which the Father in his goodness has made possible for man to attain to, and which, when once obtained, can never be taken from him. But there is also another kind of happiness which is not, in either its nature or results, the same as that which I have just referred to, and man may obtain it in a way and by a method which are different from those which are necessary to obtain the first kind. Man was originally created good and pure and happy, and only by his disobedience did he lose these qualities, which, when lost, finally made him approach somewhat the likeness of the lower animal, although the latter is probably not so unhappy as man became, by his fall from the state of the high condition of his creation. When in his original state, he was happy in what we called, and what was, his natural love, which he fully 346, the Paget Messages 1916, possessed, and needed nothing additional to make him happy. This condition made man his own master, as it were, and the Father's divine love was not necessary to develop him more as mere man than he then existed. He was pure and free from sin and in perfect harmony with God's laws governing his creation. But after the disobedience he lost this harmony, and in doing so, lost also the power to preserve in himself the happiness which was his by right of creation, and he also soon realized that as this power left him, his dependence upon himself became less and less effective to keep him in a condition of purity and contentment, and, as a consequence, he became less than perfect man, and has been such ever since that time. Now with the other qualities that were given him at the time of his creation, there was, and is, one that he has never been deprived of, and one that he has never realized his inability to exercise, although he so often exercises it wrongly, and that is the will, which is the greatest of the natural attributes that man possesses, for even God will not attempt to control that. I mean in the way of compelling. And this quality is the one that, more often than any other, will help man to again attain to that state or condition in which he was the perfect man. But while this is true, yet it is also one of the greatest obstacles to attaining to that state. Upon man himself, very largely depends the success of his regaining his pristine purity and harmony with the laws that govern his being, and he must understand this fact, for if he should believe, and rest in the belief, that other men or other instruments controlled by men, can rescue him from his present condition of inharmony and unhappiness, he will be disappointed and his salvation will be a long time delayed. But the exercise of this willpower in the proper direction will depend upon other things that he must possess in order to ensure his return to his first estate. Among these are the necessity for his obtaining knowledge that will enable him to know himself and the relationship of himself to what is true and good. This knowledge will come to him as he examines himself and learns the difference between right and wrong, and this I mean in its general sense. For right and wrong mean harmony or inharmony with the laws of which I speak, and not right and wrong according to the several circumstances of men, for these differ, and what may be right or wrong to one man will not be to another. And man by proper contemplation and observation may learn the difference between right and wrong, in the sense in which I use the terms, and be enabled to embrace or avoid those deeds or thoughts that come within one category or the other. Again, he must realize that there is such a thing as the natural love being a part of him, and a thing which may be possessed and cultivated to such a high degree that all men will be brothers to him and the children of one common Father, who has love and care for all alike who are content to remain the mere man. Again, he must realize that he has a Father in God, his Creator, and that that Father has a love for him which will always bring to him happiness and peace, if he will only respond with his own love. For man must have an object of worship and adoration, even when he possesses only the natural love, and he must learn that his love must go out to the Father in faith and confidence. There are many other things that he may learn by contemplation and meditation, as I have said. Many qualities that are desirable will flow to man from the knowledge that there is a Father who loves him, and that he has or may have a love for that Father, and also for his brother man. In fact, from these two subjects of knowledge, everything else may come to man that will make him the perfect man in harmony with the laws of his creation, and a pure, happy and contented creature. Now, when man obtains this knowledge, and here observe the distinction between knowledge of these things and the possession of them, he will naturally try to obtain all that knowledge shows him may become his to possess, and then will come into operation the great will power, and by its exercise there is nothing that can prevent him from arriving at the goal of his desires. In this way, one can, in a sense, be his own redeemer, but he will find the struggle hard, and the obstacles to be overcome, many and repelling. There are many mortals who have a wonderful development of this natural love, notwithstanding the fact that they are living in sin and in enmity with the laws that I speak of, and who will find from that fact alone that their progress will be more rapid and easy when they come to the spirit world, on their journey to the state of perfect man. I do not believe that any mortal can ever attain to this condition while in the earth life, but he can lay the foundation for a rapid progress after he becomes a spirit. The temptations and desires that beset him as a mortal, at this time, are so great, 347, the Paget Messages 1916, that rarely can he become that perfect man while on earth. But the time will come, I believe, when men will become perfect even while on earth, and in this I have reference to his natural love merely. While, as I say, for man to obtain this state of perfection, he must depend upon himself to a very large degree, yet, it will be comforting to him to know, that there are hosts of spirit friends who are with him, trying to help him to obtain the knowledge of which I have spoken, and in his contemplations and meditations they are with him, suggesting to him and impressing on him the thoughts of truth that help him very much to understand the right from the wrong, and they also sustain him, in some degree, in the exercise of his will in the right direction. So from this it must become apparent to man that a very important thing in the determination of this great problem as to what is right and what is wrong, is the kind of associates that he may have, and this applies to the mortal as well as spirit companions. And man must know this, that as his desires and appetites on earth attract to him companions of similar desires and appetites, so, also, does the same law of attraction operate in the case of his spirit friends. Now, in all this, I have no reference to the redemption of man by the possession of the divine love of the Father, for such redemption, and its way of saving man, are altogether different from those of redeeming him in his natural love. In the one case, when he has found the goal of his desires, he becomes a merely perfect man and nothing more. In the other case, he becomes an angel of God, divine is his nature, with no limitation to the progress that he may obtain, and the happiness that may become his. And, oh, man, why will you be satisfied to become merely a perfect man, when you may become a divine angel of the Father's kingdom, with immortality assured? Man may not know it, but it is a fact, that it is easier, and the way is shorter to become a divine angel, than to become a perfect man. So my advice to all men is, and I speak what I do know from the knowledge that comes to me from experience and possession, to seek for the divine love of the Father with all their strength and efforts, and then they will become not only the perfect man, but will obtain that which our first parents never obtained, but which was theirs for the proper seeking, as it is all men's. I have written enough for tonight and will close. Your old friend and professor and brother in Christ, Joseph H. Salyards. I am here, Jesus. I wish to write tonight on the subject of what it is that makes a man divine. When man was created, he was given the highest qualities that could be bestowed upon a mortal, and yet he was mere man, but the perfect one, and with these qualities was given him the possibility of becoming in his nature divine like the Father, but this gift was never possessed by him in its enjoyment of full fruition until after my coming to earth, and making known to man that such a possibility existed. The first created man never possessed this gift in its fulfillment, but merely had the possibility of receiving it, on condition that he continued in his obedience, and made the effort to receive it in the way that the Father declared was the only way. You have been told in detail what this gift was, and how the first parents forfeited the enjoyment of it by their disobedience and ambition to possess it in a way that was not in accord with the Father's way. As I have said, man lost this possibility at the time of the first disobedience, and thereafter became gradually a man with his moral nature sinking lower and lower until he got almost to the condition of the beasts in the field. And from that condition man has been gradually improving or progressing towards his first state of purity. But a great many men have ceased to know, or have never known, that God is the creator of all things, and that all creation is dependent upon him for its very existence, and in their assurance and self-importance they have assumed and professed it to be true that their progress or salvation depends upon their own efforts, and that these efforts are sufficient to bring about the state of purity or harmony with God's laws and desires. But in this men are mistaken, for there is nothing in them that is divine, and there never will be when they depend upon their own selves to progress to that state of perfection. The divine nature of the Father is not in man and will never become a part of him until he pursues the way which is absolutely necessary for him to accept and follow in order to become anything more than mere man. I will not write more tonight, as I think it best not to do so. I understand that you could not prevent your condition of sleepiness, and I do not. 348, The Paget Messages 1916, blame you, but I think it best to wait until later to finish what I desire to write. Well, my dear brother, believe that I have only love for you, and will get close to you as we progress, so I say, don't worry. I will say good night. Your brother and friend, Jesus. I am here, and desire to write just a few lines, for you are not in condition for lengthy writing tonight. The Master was disappointed, but he is so loving and good that he did not complain and only wanted you to feel that you must not worry, because of the fact that you could not take his message, but nevertheless he was disappointed. I understand that you could not control your sleepiness and are not to blame, but it was unfortunate, and it must in some way, if possible, be avoided in the future. If you only realized the great importance of these messages and the great number that are yet to be written, you would bend every effort to facilitate their reception. I am not saying this complainingly, but merely stating a fact. So try your best to get in a good condition so that there will be no failure in your receiving the messages. I am so very much interested in this work, and so are a host of other spirits who realize the importance of these truths being given to mankind. They are the only truths, and never since the time when the Master was on earth have they been revealed to man. I will not write more tonight, but will say with all my love that I am your brother in Christ, Stephen. March 16, 1916. I am here, Joseph of Arimathea. I desire merely to write a few lines to let you know that I really did exist as a mortal, and that I am the same man who laid the body of Jesus in the tomb where never before had anybody been laid. I was with him at his death, and I was with his body when it was laid in the tomb and sealed. And I know and testify that no man nor men nor society of men, as it has been said, stole his body from the tomb. His body was entombed as was the custom of my time, and he was wrapped in cerements and fitted for the long sleep in the tomb, as we supposed. 349, While I was not a full Christian, yet his teachings appealed to me as containing the truth, having about them a living inspiration, which I did not find in the teachings of the Jewish theology. For I was a Pharisee. I never thought that his death was justifiable or approved it, but I was not able to prevent it, and feeling that a great crime had been committed by the people of whom I was one, I tried to make a small atonement for the great crime by giving him burial in my new tomb. Of course, I did not believe that he would rise again in the way that he had made known to some of his disciples, and when we buried him, I only thought that that tomb would be his sepulchre until nature had destroyed the body as it had done in the cases of all others who had been entombed. As you may realize, I was interested in the proceedings taken by the Jewish leaders in their efforts to prove that he, Jesus, would not arise from the tomb on the third day, and I kept watch as well as did the soldiers, and I can testify that no mortal ever removed the stones from the mouth of the tomb. I was there when the angel came and the soldiers were put in the sleep that the Bible speaks of, and I Joseph say this, knowing that it may not be believed and the Bible makes no mention of it, that I saw the stones rolled away and the shining one standing guard at the entrance of the tomb.